Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and welcome back to the next in the Expectations series. Today, we're going to be talking about two players. Both should be starters and play important roles for the Ravens this year. Chidobe Awuzie, the cornerback, and Daniel Faalele, the right guard. Joining me to talk about them is Frazier Tafar. Frazier, how are you doing today?
Doing good, Ken. Glad to be on to talk about these two players. Glad to be part of the Expectations series. I think it's been a good series so far this summer. Looking to pick up where everyone left off.
It's a lot of fun to have these conversations. Nice opportunity to do some cross-sectional look at the position group issues that exist across the Ravens. I think pretty happy with the roster as a whole, though. You in the same spot?
Yes, I am. I think this is probably one of the best rosters that we had in a long time. Rivals the 2023 roster. Very complete. Very little holes. I'm excited for the season. Big expectations like we have almost every year, but this one, I think we could get the job done with this roster.
All right. I hope this is a year for some additional playoff success here. Awuzie, we'll start with him. The cornerback who now has a bigger role than he did when he was first signed, and the reason for that is the injury of Ardarius Washington, which has created additional depth concerns at the cornerback position for the Ravens. And I think that it's a legitimate concern. He signed a 1-year deal, solid year in Tennessee last year. We'll go over some of that in a minute. But he's got the offset language in his contracts. This is one of the great things. Tennessee is going to be paying him $7.5 million effectively, less the vet minimum that the Ravens will have to pay.
Yeah. And I think that's a credit to what the Ravens do, finding every edge they can, whether it is financially or in football itself. Awuzie is one of those signings where it's low risk, high reward. You get a chance to potentially get a starting cornerback in your rotation and have him man one side of the field with Wiggins. And I think that would bode well, but we still have yet to see what he looks like in live action against some of our better receivers.
Yeah, various excuses have been made for Awuzie in terms of why he hasn't been there so far at OTAs, but I assume he'll be back fairly soon. But he said to be sick at one point. A bunch of players are missing. And I'm not 100% sure he wasn't actually there on Friday 6-6. He might have been there, but I'll certainly be looking for that next week as practices ramp up again. So, you know, it came down, I think, to Awuzie or Tre'Davious White, and the Ravens had an option on two different guys. They, you know, they maybe at this point with the Washington injury, they would prefer to have both of them back. But White was going to cost a little bit more because they had to essentially fund his entire contract. Awuzie was less. Yep. And I think they right priced this decision that way.
And who's older? I'm pretty sure Tre'Davious White is older, right?
It's pretty close, but I will look that up as we go here. We'll get back to age in a minute, but we'll talk about a little bit about who Chidobe is right now. Physical press corner, plays the boundary well, squeezes it fairly well. He's a very solid downhill player, good career tackling record, so no issues there. If you look at his 2024 year in Tennessee, played primarily left corner. I would assume he'll probably move to right corner this year. He was targeted every 10.2 coverage snaps, which is not much at all for a cornerback to be targeted. 6.9 yards per target allowed, one touchdown, one interception, opposition passer rating of 74.1. That's excellent. He only had one penalty in 194 coverage snaps. So he didn't play all the games, but that's a good rate of penalties. And he had only two missed tackles on the season. So from a performance standpoint, certainly a very good year from Owuzie. He doesn't come out with quite the PFF grade you would have. Part of that is because he played only roughly half a season or a little bit less. If he played more at that same level, he'd have a much better score. So if you're wondering why his PFF grade doesn't look so great, that's the primary reason.
Yeah, and I think his coverage numbers do look good, especially that opposing passer rating, the 74.1. I think that pretty much is aligned to what we have in terms of Wiggins. What was Wiggins?
Wiggins was in that range. He might have been as high as 80, but I'll check it right now too while I'm looking outrageous.
So, I mean, these are good stats that we have for coverage corners. I know Marlon is obviously around that range. He had a really good season with all those interceptions. So I think having Chet Owuzie on the outside, especially like a press cover corner, I wouldn't put Stevens in that same category, even though, I mean, that's probably the best part of his game because he can't turn around and find the ball. But I think with Chet, he's able to do both, more so press physically. But let's see if he can actually turn around and find the ball. Something we haven't had in a long time at the cornerback position.
Yeah, in particular at that right corner spot where that's been a problem for the Ravens. There is a question of where he'll play. So here's how I basically see it. I think the left cornerback spot could be a change for Owuzie. He might end up there if they want that to be a spot that they're in and out of the game. And what that would mean is Wiggins would move to right corner. He would play every single snap there and be the new, we'll call it Brandon Stevens. Brandon Stevens never came off the field, basically, the last couple of years. And it's not entirely true because when Tre'Davious White here, there was some rotation between those guys. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in 23 in particular, he played every single snap. I would envision that sort of a role for Wiggins. And it would make most sense, I believe, if he were at right corner to play that role with Owuzie at left corner, in and out, depending on whether Humphrey is needed in the slot or they have only four defensive backs on the field, or maybe they find another slot corner and they do a little bit of rotation. But I would assume that Wiggins is the guy who will be in there for every snap. Make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And I think we're counting on him to be the number one quarterback this season. We know Marlon he's a little long in the tooth. He's still an effective football player, but we really need to invest in the youth of Wiggins. And I mean, he looks like he looks good during camp, put on a little weight. Would you say his speed is still there?
I mean, it looks like it to me, but I don't have the kind of fine eye that can tell 428 speed from 437 speed. Fair. So, you know, and I question anybody who thinks they really do have that, but he looks fast. Yesterday, which we're recording of this on the 7th of June, but yesterday he made two very nice plays on the ball. One of them was just a lousy overthrow by Cooper Rush, and he was back there, came off his man to make the play on the ball. And then another one, he was in a contested catch situation with Tylan Wallace in the corner of the end zone. It was actually the last play of practice, and he knocked it away and defended the drive for the offense. It's a big day for the defense. No Lamar Jackson will often do that, but he's looked very good. I mean, I would say he looks outstanding. I asked him in the he was actually at the podium as well, which is nice to have him after a good day like this. Talked about the weight gain a little bit. He looks fantastic. But the other thing that I asked him about was if he had a favorite shoulder for playing. You can go out there and listen if you want to hear the response to the question, but he says he doesn't really, that he's comfortable playing on either side. So we'll see if that's really true. I think, you know, all players have a dominant hand.
Yeah.
I think they want to use the dominant hand generally for deflecting the football. So there's probably a better side for everybody to play with. And I don't think players typically like to go with their non-dominant hand to try and deflect the football. I think that'd be kind of like as unnatural as trying to eat soup with your non-dominant hand.
Yeah, and I think Wiggins is definitely trained PR-wise to make sure he doesn't give that information, because that would give away a lot of game planning as well. So good for him. I think he does need to be versatile, whether it be left cornerback or right cornerback. We do want him to be locked down on one side. Do you envision him traveling with the number one corner?
Yeah, so that's the other question. The Ravens, I think, really suffered having Brandon Stevens being a guy that every opposing offensive coordinator knew exactly where he was at the start of the snap. So I think that they would do better if they traveled, and Wiggins traveling with either the number one or number two receivers. And you could do it either way, obviously. There's put him on island against number two, or put him on number one and have your better matchup there and still have safety help. But the other way, it would be like a Woozier and a safety and them working together to cover a number one receiver. Either one of those would be fine. I think one of the things you want to do is not give away exactly how you're doing it. And that's what they were doing with Stevens, I felt.
Yep. And I'm excited for Woozier because we really like that physical presence on the outside. I mean, that's a typical Ravens corner. Someone who can come up and make the hit in the run game. We saw Wiggins get in the mix last year. Granted, I was holding my breath every time he'd get in the mix, but still, he was putting his neck in there. He was making sure to make the hits. I want to see a lot of that from Awuzier, just showing he's more of a physical corner, kind of like Brandon Stevens was, just not afraid to get in there. I'm excited because we have someone like Marlon who's the same vibe, who's willing to get in the mix, punch the ball out. So I think I like the secondary a lot. It's really the back half of the secondary that has the questions.
Well, Wiggins was terrific last year at getting his hands on the football. He didn't always catch it, but he got his hands on the football very regularly. And that's, you know, that's going to happen. You're going to have bad years of doing that. Hopefully he turns that around. He was pretty good interceptor in college, but I don't anticipate a really big problem there. But Awuzier, I think, gives the Ravens some run defense, and I'm actually a little torn on whether I want Wiggins playing every snap when you have a player like Awuzie. If you play Awuzie at right corner and you give Wiggins the role he had last year, where he's on the field on all obvious passing downs or anytime the Ravens play the nickel because they're moving Humphrey to the slot, then I think I'm okay with Wiggins having less than a full-time role and staying at left corner, because it will mean less contact on run plays for Wiggins, and he's our most important corner. I mean, you need to protect him a little bit. Humphrey and Chidobe Awuzie are much bigger players, and they're more able to handle that contact, I think, on a regular basis. Wiggins, even though he's bigger this year, I look at that as the kind of weight that will help him in tackling and pressing and boundary pushing, you know, wide receivers. But I don't look at that as being a big advantage in the run game or anything. I'd want to be really tested in the run game anymore.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that's not Wiggins' game. We know what he's here, and he's a pure cover corner. So I think it's great to add that to his game, but let's keep the main thing the main thing.
So let's talk about some goals for Awuzie this year, because he's could use some improved ball production. He had one int and three other PDs in 2025. The one interception might or might not be bad because he didn't have that many games played, but the three PDs is low. And he has just 8 career interceptions in 8 years. He'll have some increased targeting in Baltimore because he won't be the best corner anymore. He'll be a corner who struggles. I'd like to see him integrate with the safeties in particular well. I want him to be a good pass off player. He's a veteran. There's no reason to believe he can't be that. But it's also takes two to tango. Malachi Starks has to be a guy who can handle that handoff properly, or whoever's playing on the same side as him. It probably will be Starks if he plays at right corner.
Yep, and I think this defense is really built to be too high. We like to play zone most of the time, so it could bode well for someone like Chet, because he's going to have his eyes to the quarterback and be able to read and react rather than have to play man coverage. He's not the fastest guy, but that physicality does help when you play zone, because you're able to jam, press, and then keep the eyes on quarterback and look at the route combinations coming in. So I think it would bode well for him to be more productive in terms of ball skills. I think we need to see that from the defense as a whole, because we've lacked that real playmaker intercepting the ball. Out of all people, last year with Marlon Humphrey, I don't think we would ever in a million years expect him to be leading the team in interceptions. So right. I think having a better back half of the secondary to begin the season is definitely going to be crucial, especially with Malachi Starks and Kyle Hamilton. I don't want them to bring another veteran in at safety, because it's going to take a salary cap hit, but it seems like right now we might need another safety on the roster.
Yeah, I want it to be a cheap guy, because I think they can get the job done cheaply. But the problem was they just went with the wrong guy last year in Eddie Jackson. Mm-hmm. And he was the wrong guy in multiple ways, obviously. Not only was he not very good at handling, you know, half field responsibilities on the back end, but he also was kind of a pain in the ass to Orr, I believe, in terms of thinking he understood where he needed to be better than Orr understood where he needed to be. And hopefully the addition of Pagano will straighten out and correct a problem that may exist if they have a safety that is of a similar combative or what's the word I want to antagonistic is not it, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Think they know it all within the league. Yeah,
exactly. So if they bring in a vet like that, and you know you have a young defensive coordinator, it was a recipe for not great situations. Pagano should be able to fix that. And still, you know, Pagano will be subservient to Orr. I don't have any fear of that not happening. But I'm happy if they bring in another safety. I would be happy if it were a veteran that's real cheap, like Chuck Clark. I don't think we'll let the Ravens down in that role. And the other guy that I would like to have, or another player type that I would like to have, is a younger guy, a guy who is a reject from as a rookie or a year one player, maybe a guy who was on a practice squad for all of last year and is no longer on a roster, but someone the Ravens can pick up. They liked him from the draft process sometime in the last couple of years as being a split field guy. Mm-hmm. And they think they can mold him into that with the coaching they've got and do it on the fly. I'd be perfectly happy with that. I think that they have got a really limited set of options right now at OTAs with a combination of Kane, Braid, and JAD.
Yeah,
all trying out there. And it's a indication of desperation that is very clear. And I don't want the Ravens going into the season with two safeties back there. In fact, I want to have four half field guys without counting on Hamilton. So or three anyway. That it's a big ask, but they're really two safeties short of that right now. And if you run into a situation where you've only got two safeties in a game who can play the back end, then you might be forced to put Hamilton back there. Happened a lot in 23, and it really hurt the defense when it did.
I think an amazing story is that they can get JAD to perform at safety this year, and actually I think that would be a hell of a story for the NFL, because. Yeah. It might suit well for him, because obviously he can't stay in the hip pocket of the receiver or turn his head to get the ball. But I think let's see what he can do, either if he's downhill or really showing off his ball skills instincts wise, because what he's being asked in the NFL is just not doable for him right now. So they say he's a smart guy football wise. So you have to be very smart to play safety. You need to know combinations. You need to know what's going to come behind you, double right. moves and stuff like that. So let's see if a JAD can do it.
So I'm skeptical of his ability to do it. I'm also a little skeptical of some of the coach speak that's been heaped on him like toppings on an ice cream sundae, frankly, these last few days. You know, or saying he's the smartest guy in the room. Kyle Hamilton is in the room. I mean, there's no freaking way he's the smartest guy in the room. There's just no way in hell. So, if you've ever listened to Hamilton speak, and I don't even remember hearing JAD speak at the podium. He may be very knowledgeable. You know, they've had other guys run through who've been very smart. You know, Jeremy Lucien was an ex-engineer and a guy who certainly is very smart in terms of picking up the playbook quickly. I'm not buying it. With JAD. I think, you know, he's a guy who is smart enough probably to pick up the playbook, or I don't think Orr would risk saying it, but the smartest guy in the room, please.
Yeah, I think that's too much to say.
All right. Let's talk about a good season for Chidobe Awuzie. What does it look like to you?
I think a good season for Awuzie is solidifying himself in the starting rotation, getting at least 75% of the snaps this year, at whether it be left corner or right corner, opposite of what Wiggins wants to do this year. And I think interceptions-wise, I think two interceptions and maybe 11 pass defenses on the year would probably be a good year for him.
Okay. All right. That's pretty hefty in terms of the passes defense. That's a big uptick for him. But hey, I'll sign up for that one right now.
Yeah.
A good season for me, healthy for 15 plus games, never challenged for the starting outside cornerback job in nickel, meaning in the nickel package. He's in there on the outside somewhere with Humphrey probably in the slot, but may play some rotationally or be left out of the Ravens base package. I think that's a possibility as well. Continues to play at a level consistent with the 2024 season in more snaps. I think actually that'd be pretty darn good. Plays the run well. Fits well with the Ravens secondary in terms of creating opportunity for coverage sacks. No expectation of increased ball production. So this may be a case of on a rate basis that he might end up with one interception, maybe two, with about seven PDs. But I just wanted to say it qualitatively instead of what you said very, very quantitatively.
No, fair. And I think that's a good season. I think his run game fit, I mean, it's going to be an essential part of what he does. He has to show that physicality as soon as he gets on the field, because I imagine on rundowns, if Marlon needs a breather, he's going to be the guy that's in there, because we need that physicality at corner. But yeah, I like your list.
All right. How about a great year?
Great year is he's the solidified starter on the outside, essentially taking Marlon's position in base package and forcing Marlon to be the nickel cornerback. I think really being a threat in terms of in ball skills, I think if he gets 4+ interceptions, that'd be a great season. I think if he's able to adapt to our scheme, that'd be a good one, because people have shown not to do well in the first year under a brand new scheme, especially with Orr. We saw that issue with Williams and what's his other name? Jackson.
Yep.
So seeing Awuzie come in and be able to pick up the playbook very fast, I think that will be a great season as well.
All right. That sounds good to me. A great season for me. I'll just read it directly. Takes a step forward, playing in a deep and talented secondary by knowing when to trust his safety help and generate underneath bracket opportunities, and otherwise gamble for ball production. Adapts to Orr's scheme and takes a step forward with coaching from Pagano and others. Gets by with limited physical gifts to post similar coverage metrics in terms of YPT, but with many more targets and better ball production. Okay, and I did, you know, normally when a player's only signed for 1 year, I put in something about wanting the Ravens to be interested in re-signing him. I'll toss that in there as well. Is that if in a great year, the Ravens look to see if there's a way to extend him here. It may not work because he's truly here on a 1 year prove it deal. He is expecting to make a salary that's somewhere probably between the vet minimum and that $7.5 million number the Titans are actually paying him for a full year. And next year he may say, oh no, look, I'm worth 2 years, $15 million or whatever. And the Ravens aren't probably going to pick that up. He then becomes a 1 year solution, and the Ravens have to look to the draft or development of, you know, Tampa or Kone or longer beam into an outside regular role.
Yeah, I guess at that point we could just let him go like Stevens. So.
Yeah. All right. How about we move on and talk about Daniel Faalele? He's entering his fourth season. He is now, dare I say, entrenched as the starting right guard.
That's. I don't like to hear that, but at this point, I think the Ravens have 100% sold out on Faalele, and I'm here for the ride at this point.
Sold out. They have sold out on him.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to stay. This is a situation probably for you, from what I'm hearing from you, that is similar to how I feel about the Patrick Queen draft pick. Patrick Queen draft pick, I dead set against it. In fact, if anybody wants to go look at me being pissed off at the Patrick Queen draft pick out there, go look on YouTube. It's a matter of public record. My thing on the night is I wanted Xavier McKinney, who just came out on the list of PFF safeties, as the second best behind Kyle Hamilton in the entire game. Boy, would it be great to have those two together.
Ridiculous.
And Derwin James additionally, maybe even.
But, oh, my God.
But we wouldn't have signed Marcus Williams if we'd have drafted Xavier Worthy in that 2020 draft. 20 draft.
Might not even have Hamilton if we had James as well.
That is possibly true as well. So that would have been a downer, and that's I don't want to contemplate that, but I still think the Derwin James pick was a big swing and a miss on the 2018 draft. And you have to look at it in total, or the Ravens will want to look at that draft in total, and so will most Ravens fans, and say, hey, look, they succeeded overall. What are you angry about? And
good future Hall of Famers in that draft.
Yeah, they certainly, got the job done from a lot of perspectives in that draft, and they unwound that draft very effectively. But they had an opportunity to not have Hurst be the guy at 26 and give up some later draft capital and, have Derwin James instead, who is all pro as a rookie. But let me get back to this because I've kind of lost the thread here. So anyway, Patrick Queen as a rookie, basically, the way I responded to that on draft night was, well, I hope he makes the Hall of Fame. It's just he's not the player that I don't expect him to be that player. Daniel Faalele, obviously, at a little different stage. He's in the fourth year of his career. You're saying you're on board for the ride. And there's no doubt about it. Daniel Faalele, from my scoring perspective, from the way I look at him, is a triumph of function over form. Form is lousy. He looks terrible on the field. He looks ponderously slow, oftentimes indecisive, which is really something he could actually improve in. But he's got very clear physical limitations to who he is that further dictate exactly how the Ravens have to line up, because Faalele can't play any other position on the offensive line other than right guard, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think you're right to assume I have that same reaction that you have from PQ pick. I think. It's, I really love offensive line play, and I'm very hard when I critique, and he's just not nasty. And I don't like that about someone protecting Lamar Jackson. I don't need someone, a soft giant out there. We need someone who's going to rip someone's head off for our guy. And I don't think Daniel Faalele is that person. I remember during the Steelers game last year at home, I saw a different side of Rodgen Rosengarten at Garden. He literally pulled on one of these plays and he came downhill on the Ravens. On the Steelers linebacker. And that was real Ravens football coming downhill at you. And I haven't seen that from Faalele one time. He's scared to put his weight on these players, really put them into the ground. I don't know if he's thinking he can get fined for that, but I would love to see him finish as a blocker. Yeah. He does not finish.
Yeah, completely agree on the finishing, and it's an area where he definitely needs to improve. His run blocking in general is a work in progress, but a set of limitations that we're going to live with. It's like you've got road work going on over a 6-year period or something. Forever long, Daniel Faalele plays in the NFL, there's going to be limitations to him physically that are going to keep him from being the guard everybody wants. But there's other physical.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone, all with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Things that he could use properly. He can use his arm length much better than he does right now. Still plays too much patty cake, not enough direct punching. Yep. To the chest plate, to the armpit. I want to see obviously more of that. The footwork is it's not happening. And I there could be small technical improvements in what he does in terms of footwork, but I don't think there's going to be times where his footwork can get to the level where he can get over on a pass play to pull and stop a unblocked edge player on that side. So you have some sort of play action concept or whatever that you're running, and that backside edge defender needs to guard that side, and Falele needs to switch sides. I just don't see him ever having the foot speed necessary to do that. And he had two failures. I forget it was against the Bengals or the Steelers, but whatever game it was, it looked really bad when it happened. And I'm like, okay, you can do that once, but you should know that you can't call that play a second time with Daniel Falele, the guy you're asking to pull on a pass play. You have to stay away from that. The coaches are aware of what his limitations are. I think it's fair to say, wouldn't you, that he didn't impact the overall Ravens run game in a negative way, despite his own limitations as a run blocker?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, I would agree with that very, very well, because I think they still ran for almost 2,000 yards as a rushing team. So, I mean, you can't do that bad if your team's putting up those kind of numbers. I think he's doing his job. We would just like to see him do his job effectively and, quite frankly, more aesthetically pleasing. Because it's a struggle to watch him out there sometimes.
I can understand that, and he's no fun to watch when you're scoring him either. But he's very effective as a pass blocker. He cut down on his penalties to nothing in the last basically half of the season with several other linemen, getting it together at the right time. And the last five games of the season, he really played very well, I thought. I still got things I want him to do better, but. If somebody's saying, you can have the Daniel Falele of the last five games for the next 5 years, I'm jumping on some sort of contract extension. Yeah.
Heck yeah. And I think I love Falele because he's one of those homegrown Raven talents that's saving us money at a position. But I think I would love to see Emory Jones come in there and give him hell. I mean, I want to see him come in there and fight for the position. I don't know if Emory would be more suited for the left guard position. Do you think that's more so a Voorhees and Ben Cleveland?
One of the Ravens' problems is that Ben Cleveland also kind of is more like a right guard than a left guard. He's in between Fa'alele and a truly mobile guard in terms of the ability to get out and get moving from left guard. So a lot of the counter plays the Ravens have to run, they have to do center tackle and avoid guard usage.
Yeah,
whether left or right, and if they want to do the single puller from left guard, that's a real struggle. That's a real struggle for it'll be a real struggle for Falele. It's a somewhat of a struggle for Cleveland, and I think that the Ravens will have to work their magic on some of these other modest athletes like Emory Jones or Voorhees to try and get them to be decent pullers. But they did it with Bozeman. They did it with Hurst. So it can be done.
And we're considered a right-hand run team, right?
Yeah.
I think not having a dominant right guard is hurting us from eventually getting to the left poles in a left-hand run game. And I think if we're able to be ambidextrous in our approach – It bode well for us, especially for a guy like Derrick Henry, who can you just give him the ball and his vision's great enough to find the little crease to get in there. Same thing with Keaton Mitchell and Justice. I mean, these guys have shown us to find the hole and cut back if need to. So the guard play is hurting us in that sense. That's why I kind of have a nonchalant feeling about him, because he's preventing us from being completely versatile in the run game.
All right. Well, I think that's fair. And that's, if he's hurting the Ravens anyway, or being the run game, two things about it. One is run blocking is just less important than pass blocking, no matter where you are. It's kind of like you just make the same statement in baseball. On base percentage is more important than slugging percentage. I don't know why the fuck they ever decided to start adding those two things together in one number. It pisses me off every time I see OPS mentioned. But it's more important. And the higher leverage plays are passing plays. And the PFF has an additional thing where they'll weight more heavily that run blocking when coming up with a aggregate score for guard or center, which is just crazy. It just doesn't make any sense at all. It's most extreme at center. So a player like Linderbaum is a very extreme poor pass blocker and good run blocker, really looks better within the PFF system than he is. And with Fa'alele, he's getting hurt a little bit in terms of his aggregate score, but it's in Fa'alele's point, he had problems with all sorts of play early in the year. It was really the last five games that he got it together and was playing at a very high level, pass and run. So I don't really look at his PFF grades from last year and say that there was I really have an issue with it. I did want to throw this out there, though. The final five games this last year, he had 309 scored snaps as I had it, and he got 264 points scored on those. That's 0.85 for a raw score.
Wow.
Now, if you're familiar with my system, I know you are, but there's other people who maybe will not be out there. That raw score then is subject to an additional adjustment based on the quality of play, but basically the most significant factor being the quality of play above the replacement level that he's facing. It would have been on the B-plus to A-minus border for those last five games in aggregate that he would have scored. So it's a stark improvement from the first 14 games when he was on the C-minus D-plus border. So he hadn't completely barfed up the season at that point, but he certainly
felt like it.
It's not as exciting to have a third-year player who you only have one more year left playing at the C-minus D-plus level. I'll take it out of a rookie, you know, where there's a lot of runway and you're going to get better play out of that guy. But that's not very exciting out of a third-year player.
You almost can call him a rookie, though, because it was his first year at the position. So his experience at that level.
I can't for sand left in the hourglass purposes.
Fair.
You know, the Ravens have, you know, team control over him for only 4 years, and that's the truest north barometer, the north indication of north that I have.
Sure.
All right. He did not have a negative play in either playoff game, by the way. He did have 17 missed blocks, which are zeros, by the way, but he did not have a negative play in either game. He didn't give up a pressure, didn't give up a penetration that led to a loss on a run play, didn't have any penalties, didn't give up a quarterback hit or a sack. So really fine play in the playoffs for him. No penalties after week 10. Before then, he had four offensive holding calls, one illegally downfield on a pass, and one false start. So the penalties had been a really big problem, and he got it turned around. That's five declinable fouls in those first 10 weeks, which is quite bad. All right. Maybe let's talk about his run blocking a little bit. We talked a little bit about things you don't like, but maybe talk about it at a high level, some things that are really make you fearful it will never work out for him. You're closer to that point than I am. I'm more willing to overlook these run blocking weaknesses. I acknowledge that they exist. I'm just saying that I'm more willing to live with that.
Yeah, me too. I think if there was one thing that I would nitpick on his weaknesses is just his pulling and his getting to the second level. I think that's probably the next part of his game. If he's able at least to have a 35 to 40% hit rate on getting to the second level or being able to pull at this rate, I think that would bode well for the offense because we're able to do it when he's not, maybe 15 to 10%. So I think getting him at a higher clip, getting to the second level and pulling and connecting would just be amazing for us. But that's something he needs to work on still.
Yeah, some of that can be improved. And I think there's two things I'd like to see him do better in terms of his run blocking, in terms of specifically the climbing you're talking about, because it's still a weakness. He's never going to have the foot speed to really climb like a Linderbaum and look way down the field effectively for blocks. Although there's a couple of plays last year where he's running way down the field and maintaining his momentum well. If he had hit someone, it could have been really effective.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that he ever found a block on those couple of plays I'm thinking of.
But that Tampa play?
I think so. I think so. I've the couple in my mind, it's more like I can see him on an open field and there's no uniform of another player that he's impacting, which is obviously a problem.
Yep.
The decisiveness is a real issue though. When you go to level two, your first thing you got to be able to do is know who you're looking for to be able to find that guy. If your job is hit a scraping linebacker, you move up half a level effectively and you hit that guy. If your job is to go after a safety, then that's a little bit different. And you're going to have some what do I call it? Agility, relative agility deficit versus that safety where you try and move up on him and he's going to be too quick for you and move one way or another. That's when linemen get lungy in space. And one of the things, Daniel Falele has an advantage over a number of other linemen because of his size and length. He actually has a terrific blocking radius, if you want to call it that, in terms of how far away a player could be to impact someone. But he's got to not expend that. It's like a resource. As soon as you expend it, you're out of fuel, and you're the pilot thing is you're out of altitude, airspeed, fuel, and ideas all at the same time. that's a bad situation to be in. So he doesn't want to become expended in level two. But what he can do is he's such a large human being. Nobody wants to make contact with him. Just use your body as a shield to the play itself, and don't try and be super aggressive or lungy in level two. And you'll find that other players will take time getting around you on their own. And you can have an impact on plays that way. I look for that. I don't really even see that much in his game from last year. You know, it's something that I would give him credit for blocks if you know, on plays where it did occur. And he's clearly just trying to mirror a guy in level two and mirror him away from the play.
Yep. I really agree with your point. I love your point right there, because the tendencies of newer guards and a newer offensive lineman period is you're used to working off like a play sheet, play call, and you're thinking, I have to get this guy, I have to get to this spot. And really, football is all about flowing within the play. And I think Falele, as he continues to get experience at guard, he's going to understand, maybe I don't have to run to this point. Maybe I can let the defender come to me, and just because at the end of the day, you're just trying to make alleys for the running back, and trying to get to your guy is not the goal. Trying to make a hole for the running back is the goal. So I think once he's able to get that concept and essentially shield the hole and get to the guy, I think he's able to be more of an impactful puller and a climber to the second level. You're on mute.
Great stuff. Thank you. Miss block rate of 12.2% is very, very high for an interior offensive lineman, by the way. I can't remember another guard for the Ravens or an interior offensive lineman for the Ravens who's had that high a rate. I'm not saying it absolutely never happened, but I can't remember it. Let's put it that way. And even tackles, when they're over 10%, it's not a good thing. It can happen, particularly because run plays go away from you and you don't have any block to make, and it's naturally embedded in the scoring scale for tackles. But 10% missed block rate for a tackle is bad too. But 12.2 is ridiculously high for an interior offensive lineman, because they always have a proximal target to go after.
Someone's already inside for you. You got to get them.
There you go. All right, let's move on. Talk pass blocking a little bit, because I think one of the stories of last year in terms of his improvement was somewhat better hand usage in those final five games, contributing to better pass blocking.
Yeah, and I think his pass blocking is definitely above average, around league average. We'll say that. I think he's just so big, and I think that's his advantage. People have to really get around him. Most of the times when he does have problems is when he can't get his hands on people and they just get through him with pure speed. And we've seen that with Chris Jones in the beginning of the year when he got in right with the sack. I mean, he's doing well. All he has to do is make sure he's communicating with Linderbaum and Rosengarten on the right side, especially on the stunts, because sometimes he can get caught latching on to that underneath guy when the guy's coming in over on the stunts. So
the over guy is coming to his side.
Exactly. Yeah. He can get stuck on the inside guy trying to push him through. War Hop seems to be a very strong offensive line coach. I'm confident in him understanding how to teach the technique. And I don't think we had much issues with stunts in the playoffs really hurting us. Me personally, on the outside looking in, I don't know how offensive linemen fall for stunts, because at the end of the day, you need to stay in your lane. And if you're chasing around the cup as a guard, I think we have different problems. So I'm glad to see Farley's strong at one position. I think this year he needs to become close to great at that position in terms of just pass blocking.
Okay. All right. That's certainly a high goal for him. If you're a great pass blocker at any offensive line position, you're probably going to be fine, even if your run blocking is very, very poor. It's hard. You really got to trip up pretty bad in run blocking to be a great pass blocker and really fail overall as a lineman.
Fair.
All right. So a couple goals that I had, some of them we mentioned already: improving the decisiveness, using his size and intimidation to force the avoidance from the opponent rather than getting lungy in space. I want to see continued improvement of his hand usage. I want to see him finish. I think we've talked about all these things.
Yeah.
I probably don't need to go back in it. I don't have real big expectations for footwork improvement, but I want him to avoid footwork catastrophes. And there are two types. Type number one is he pulls out and he's so big that he trips up whoever's next to him, whether that's the center or he's going on some kind of one gap or two gap pull to the right where he might even trip up the tackle.
Or Lamar.
Well, that would be bad. Yeah. There's, if you go back far enough, by the way, the Ravens had one play in 2005, I believe, where both the center and the guard stepped on Bowler's 2 feet.
Wow.
That was one of the worst. That's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was Mike Flynn and Kedrick Vincent.
Were
the perps in that case. But as good, I think people have taken for granted just how good the Ravens' footwork has been during the Joe D era, and hopefully it's continuing with Warhop here too. But it was a mess at times in the Ravens' distant past, and it's something that didn't go all that well. What else to say here? Catastrophe number two is this. He does sometimes get beat through the B gap effectively, and he's behind a player such that he needs to recover. He's not bad in terms of pushing that player out towards the back pylon of the pocket, and sometimes even maintaining the integrity of the cone as he does that. But the problem is that when he does it too aggressively, I'm always in fear that the tackle or the center could, because it could be either direction, get beat to the B gap, but he could also get beat to the A gap. That either the guard or the center, or even somebody further left of the center, is going to get a player pushed onto the back of their legs. That's one of the things that I cannot tolerate in an offensive line. I'd rather risk a quarterback getting hit than you push a player onto the back of the legs of an offensive lineman. And it's really saying something, because I think Lamar has a better chance to avoid that play and have it be a minimal kind of a sack, or maybe even a run for a short gain if he leaves the pocket. But it's the kind of thing that if you're really taking risk with your line mates play after play or pass play after pass play, where you get to beat to one side, that could be really bad. So that's something I'd look for him to reduce this year.
Yeah, me as well. I think we really listed off all the things that we expect Fale to do this year. Really, for me, the big thing is just being able to finish. If he can finish, I think he solves 30% of his problems, really, in terms of just being a better football player at the guard position.
That will certainly, if he's a finisher, his intimidation factor will grow by an order of magnitude here.
Yeah. You're not going to get Chris Jones picking on him and making sure he lines up head up against him. I mean, we don't need that kind of pointing out against Spot Lily. We don't need him being the obvious weak link, even though he's the biggest guy on the line.
Would be great if he finished in level two once or twice, just drove a linebacker into the ground.
Send a message.
With his size. Yeah, would send a message. And I think, he'd be an extremely intimidating force. And I think that's how you gain some of the positional mirroring advantages that he could have to protect a running lane. So we saw how Patrick Queen played against Derrick Henry. He's already afraid of contract, of contract and of contact,
of anything.
But of contact in particularly, if Falele was involved, I think it would have been a lot tougher for him.
Yeah. I don't mean to cut off guard. Speaking of Patrick Queen, I was watching highlights yesterday, and there was this play at Pittsburgh where Lamar just ran through the middle of the defense, and he made Patrick Queen just look like he was standing there watching him. I mean, I don't know. I know when I see stuff like that, I just think I can't believe Lamar is on our team because he made him look like an idiot just watching Lamar Jackson run through.
Yeah. All righty. Well, let's talk about a good season, a great season. So what's a good season for Daniel Faalele look like?
Good season for Daniel Faalele is really continuing the success he had at the end of last year, starting right guard position, continuing to show that he can be an effective right guard, serviceable right guard, not cause too many mistakes, limiting the penalties. A small increase in the mixed block rate. We're not looking for a complete overhaul in who he is, but a good season would just be continuing the success he had at the end of last year and being able to maintain that C-plus range of play.
Okay. I have a good season. I'm similar. Never challenged for the right guard job. That's a big factor, though. Play at the end of last season does not prove to be a fluke, and he continues to show his skills that made him a fine pass blocker down the stretch. Avoids a big penalty relapse with a season of three or fewer post-snap flags. Run blocking improves marginally as he figures out how to change things. He can. Decisiveness, level two intimidation without contact, finishing, etc. Ravens, consider an extension.
Yep, I like that. And I think if we were able to get him on a cheap extension for 3 years, I think you take that as the Ravens because you need as many cheap deals as you can under the Lamar Jackson era. And seeing the way Faalele has progressed last year, and if he's continuing to progress this year, I think the only thing you can do is just hope on his potential. When I heard that he was working on some body things last week from John Harbaugh, I was thinking he could have been overweight. And that's something that caused me concern because usually when you hear a body thing, like he's working really hard to get back from that. I don't know. That just made my ears perk up. What does that mean? Is he non-shape or do they give him a new number?
He was at practice this week. Okay. So at least there's not an ongoing problem that I'm aware of. He did miss the first week of OTAs. He missed a day or maybe even two. Might have been the whole week for that matter. I don't remember exactly. With some sort of an injury. And Harbaugh addressed it when he was at the podium that day. He talked about he's got a physical thing he's coming back from. It didn't sound like, you know, he failed his conditioning test because I think Harbaugh would lay that right at his feet.
Fair.
Just say, yeah, he failed the conditioning test. So he's not getting on the field yet. that's what he did to Ben Cleveland. So, yeah, I think that Faalele is probably, he looks to be not fat to me. He looks to me, honestly, to be a very well-proportioned athlete, which is unusual for a man his size. So we'll see. He's not, certainly not Desmond Watson in terms of carrying around a ton of flubber on his apple-shaped body.
Good.
All right. What's a great season look like?
A great season for him is, I mean, he takes that next step into being a top 15 right guard in the league. He's able to play every single snap at right guard, not being challenged by Ben Cleveland or Emory Jones. Finishing, whether it be on pulls, on getting to the second level, or even the guy right in front of him, showing that he can get nasty this year is something that I would consider to be a great season. And then also getting the missed block rate down to 5%. Let's cut it in half in terms of his missed block rate. And then showing that he's a leader on the offensive line, getting a little more vocal and really solidifying himself as one of the guys that we're going to be able to count on moving forward in the future.
Okay. That's an interesting one about him being a leader. He's takes so much, he's so much heat and so much, direct coaching. Players like that have a hard time stepping forward as leaders when there's always somebody buzzing in their ear, chirping in their ear about how they need to do something differently. Yeah, so it is a hard position, a hard ask for a player like Faalele. For me, a great season is plays 15 plus games at right guard, turns in play at the 75th percentile or better as a pass blocker, and at the 50th percentile as a run blocker. I think that both of those would be an improvement.
Yep.
Learns to be a good finisher when left behind on combination blocks. That's a big one, by the way. That's an easy finishing opportunity when Linderbaum helps set him up. And Linderbaum is not the greatest at that, but Linderbaum at least will hopefully jab at the guy a little bit, hopefully get him up on one pin, when he's there, when that defensive tackle's there, Fa'alele needs to drive that guy into the ground.
Yes.
He needs to get really physical with that guy. And those are the easy opportunities you get for a nice finish in the run game. He needs to reduce his missed block rate and penalties remain low. Linderbaum's play improves as he develops trust for Fa'alele.
Yep.
That's a big ask, but that would be good. And the Ravens attempt to extend him prior to the end of the 2025 season. That may happen. It may not before the 2025 season, which is the ideal time to do it. And it would be less costly now. You might be looking at 3 years, $14 million right now, 3 years, $13 million. I really don't know the exact amount. It might be 3 years, 18 already. But if you're at the end of this next year, it might be 3 years for 27. If he has the kind of year that I'm describing in a great season. So, they want to get it done soon.
Then I would be running to that number, 3 for 18. Yes, please. Yeah. I'll sign up very fast for that.
Yeah. All right. Always great talking football with you, Frazier. I assume as of now that we're going to continue our matchup show during the season, which is a pair of shows that come out for the offense and defense as the games are coming up. And always a pleasure to have you on. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You guys can find me at Twitter /X at F_Rave8. That's F_RAVE8.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for all the listens. If you're on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you can think of a way to pass this on to that next person who might really enjoy this kind of content, I really will appreciate that greatly. And word of mouth is the best way to grow. Frazier, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone, all with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.